Hello and welcome to Back Markup Podcast. My name is Raj.
My name is Brayden.
How you doing, Brayden?
This is episode... What are we up to?
I'm 41.
You've thrown me. You didn't say the episode number.
I did.
You asked me how I was before the number.
Did I?
We've got it on tape. I can check.
Oh, Lord.
Okay.
We can check.
I'm doing well. It is episode 41.
Yes.
Let's just roll on through like nothing happened.
Awesome.
Of course, we are back to talk about all the F1 news of the week, and we will be previewing... Where are we at? Spain.
Spanish Barcelona.
But before we do that, Raj, I thought I would give you just a very short quiz. Coming off the back.
You've been quizzing me a lot.
I have
lately.
Been quizzing you a lot. I like these quizzes. I found some cool sort of quizzes around.
Okay.
Quiz for you about Red Bull coming off the back of their double DNF.
and
of course, Red Bull are both our favorite team.
Yeah.
I was wondering how much you knew about the drivers in their past. You're wearing a Red Bull shirt.
I am.
Let me just get the quiz ready for you.
Okay,
so Raj, I got it ready. Do you know, first of all, question number one, I'm making it a 10-part question now. How many drivers has Red Bull run in its career from a team starting in 2005, taking over from Jaguar, to 2018 now? How many individual drivers have there been performing in a race? Not test drivers, just in a race, in a Grand Prix.
Good Lord. Okay, let me just count them out.
Well, my next question is going to be naming them all, so just take a guess.
Just take a guess. Okay, one sec.
I've given you a massive hint by telling you something earlier, but I'm not going to... It'll be interesting if you can... All right, Raj, we'll do this in the other way.
Seven?
No, you're wrong.
Damn.
There are nine.
Ah.
There are nine. So what I'm going to do is I want you to go in whatever order you want. Try and name those nine. Because
okay.
I struggled. I eventually got about seven as well myself.
Yeah, okay.
And there were two that I was missing. I'm curious to see if you missed the same ones. I would say so.
Yeah.
Who do you have?
Okay, so Mark Webber, Daniel Ricciardo.
Okay, yep. Mark Webber, 2007 to 2013, and Daniel Ricciardo from 2014 onwards, yes?
Yes. Christian Klien.
Yes, he was one of the first for 1 year in 2005
Indeed.
And a little bit of six.
Yep. David Coulthard.
Yep, 2005 to 8.
Sebastian Vettel.
9 to 14.
Daniel Kvyat.
Yep, 15 to a little bit of 16.
Max Verstappen.
16 and onwards, yep. See, this is the part, this is the exact list I had. I didn't get Klein, I got someone else.
Oh, okay. I'm starting to struggle now.
I can give you the years. There were short runs in both 2005 and 2006. 2006, particularly, was short. It was only a handful of races.
2005, 2006.
And 2005 was also not that many races in the scheme of a career, I guess.
Tonio Liuzzi, maybe?
Correct. That's the one I got.
Okay.
I didn't get Klein, but I got Liuzzi.
Okay.
He only did a handful of races in 2005, I believe it was.
And then fuck. This one must be really,
I don't think you'll ever get this. It's Robert Doornbos.
Robert Doornbos, of course,
yeah.
Yes.
It's a weird kind of... I find it funny that, Coulthard had his, ups and downs, but overall a very, prominent career over 15 seasons.
Solid driver.
And then after that, nothing really happens till Webber comes into the fray, because there's, Klein, Liuzzi, and Doornbos. They don't do anything for Red Bull.
Yeah.
Doornbos doesn't do anything for anyone, actually.
I think that was the saving up by Red Bull and hiring Adrian Newey part of the proceedings.
Maybe, because I was reading his history and it's like, tennis player, Doornbos, turned Formula One driver.
Yeah.
Okay, that sounds like a normal thing for a driver to... All right, fair enough. Anyway, I just thought it was interesting. I might do a couple more of these. We can't do teams like Ferrari because we'll be here for an entire episode, but...
Actually, that is weird. There's another tennis player I found out about who's now in rally racing. David Nalbandian, of all...
Well, this guy went to a Formula One race and goes, this is fucking cool. How do I do this? And someone said, well, you're way too old for karts. How about you go try Formula Forward or something? And then 5 years later, he was driving for Red Bull at a Grand Prix.
That's crazy.
Which is very crazy. I mean, obviously athletic, but anyway, crazy nonetheless. Raj, let's get into some news.
Sure. Alrighty then. So this is a kind of pair of news stories. They come one after the other. And they were released about 4 days, 5 days separate. So, hardline Renault won't extend Red Bull's engine decision deadline. So, an uncompromising Renault has put Red Bull up against the wall, insisting it will require a decision by the Milton Keynes outfit about its 2019 engine deal on May 15th.
Which is very soon. A week away, basically.
Which is a week away. Very, very soon. Essentially, everyone knows that Red Bull has been considering Renault or Honda for quite a while. They've had a bit of a roller coaster relationship with Renault, and Honda's pretty much an unknown quantity as well. So, hard decision. Anyway, 5 days later, this other story came out. Renault extends Red Bull's engine decision deadline. That lasted a long time, Cyril.
Do we have a specific date for this one then?
2 weeks exactly from May the 15th. Okay. So May the 35th.
Right. So early the month after May. Yeah. June. Early June, that's the one. Okay, cool.
Early June, yep.
Well, look, I can't say it's surprising. We've been reporting on stories like this for a while, and we were saying, oh, look, there's no way they provide an answer by May 15. There's no way they know anything about Honda's kind of arrangement by then.
Yeah.
We will have maybe some idea around this Spanish Grand Prix. It was, of course, a lot of people are bringing upgrades, whether that be engine, aero, a lot of different things. So maybe we'll get an idea of what's going on there this weekend. But, yeah, it's not surprising that gets extended.
Do you know if Honda's bringing anything to Barcelona? I don't actually have any information about that.
I'm not 100% sure. I heard that they were aiming for Barcelona a while ago. I don't know if they got that done. I know Red Bull are bringing some big packages. I know a couple of teams like Williams are bringing almost a new car.
McLaren's bringing in
their B-spec,
car.
Basically. Yep. Yeah. I don't know if Williams is a whole new car, but quite a lot of changes. Hopefully the things they've been learning, getting things right, things like that. So Spain's a big one. And then Monaco is just Monaco. So Spain's really the only thing we have coming up that's going to tell us much, I'd say.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Anyway, moving on to another story.
Sure.
I'll leave that story for you, actually. I'm going to go over to a quote from Magnussen. Did you see this after, of course, his, rather aggressive weekend in Baku?
Yeah.
The quote he came out to say was, "I am prepared to die in the car."
Yeah.
Yeah, righto. He defended his aggressive racing style, saying that it was a completely necessary in the ultra-competitive midfield battle that was going on.
Mm-hmm.
He also mentioned that he would have loved to race back in the 60s, where it was a lot more dangerous.
Yep.
This guy is insane.
He's a little bit.
"I will give everything. I will die in the car. I won't hold back. I will put my life on the line." Absolutely. Yeah. When you put your helmet on in the race, it's just like everything else in the world. I find that's just like everything else there is in the world. What? "I love my family and many things I enjoy in my life, but when I went in that car, nothing else really matters anymore."
Yeah.
That's intense. No wonder he puts himself and others at risk sometimes.
Yes, but did you hear his explanation for those statements? Are they there?
Well, in terms of you might get a penalty, you might lose a front wing, but there's no point coming 11th sort of thing?
No. He was saying, you know, after people were like, "Okay, dude, you want to die in a race car? That's really, really strange. Mm. You should calm down." To which he replied with, no. "Listen to what I'm saying. I am prepared to die in a race car. I don't want to die in a race car. I don't search for death.
Mm.
I'm not looking for danger, but I will put my life on the line. I will push so hard that my life will be on the line to get results." And that, I simultaneously think he's a nutcase and respect the hell out of him.
As long as the people around him who might not be willing to die for their job aren't put at that kind of risk.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there are people out there who can have that amazing passion for racing, but also say, "I would rather lose this race right now or lose this position
than
potentially lose my life." And I can totally accept that. I'm not going to say that they're any less dedicated to their craft, their job, because it is a job. At the same time, mad respect for caring that much. But you're not the only person out on that track.
No, you know? It's true.
And there's a lot that can go wrong that, you know, you might come off fine, but if it was your fault, how would you feel if you caused one of those incidents? And, you know, I don't think he'd be saying that so much after that.
Mm.
Anyway, I just think it further goes to show why everyone thinks Magnussen's a crazy person.
Magnussen.
Oh, I like it.
Hey.
That could be the episode name.
All right. Let's do it. Let's do it. Okay, so this story comes straight from the lips of Ron Dennis's corpse or Zach Brown. So McLaren has said, ahead of next week's trip to Barcelona for the Spanish Grand Prix and our first in-season test, we can confirm the test lineup as follows. So the MCL33 test, day one is Stoffel Vandoorne and day two is Lando Norris. And then the Pirelli tyre test, day one is Lando Norris and day two is Oliver Turvey. So Fernando Alonso is not going to be doing any of that testing.
He's probably got a WEC weekend.
Probably got several WEC weekends. Yeah. And yeah, dude, his schedule is monstrous. From now until like the end of June, it's just batshit crazy. But yeah, Lando Norris, by the way, is seriously both impressing me and letting me down. Did you watch the Formula 2?
I watched it today, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I watched race 2 of it.
Race 2, today. Okay. Yeah. So you saw George Russell take a win.
Yes.
Okay.
It was a great battle for the front.
Indeed. And the championship is turning out to be a head-to-head battle between Lando Norris, McLaren ace, and George Russell, the Mercedes ace.
Mm.
And then there's another British driver called Jack Atkin, who'll be doing testing for Renault later on. He's kind of fallen to the sideline amongst the, in the face of Russell and Norris and that kind of talent.
It's interesting because, I mean, even though Russell is showing some amazing pace in Formula 2, there's not that same opening that McLaren looks like it could be having. I mean, there's a lot of speculation that they're not going to be looking at keep paying the salary they do for someone of Fernando Alonso's kind of reputation.
Yeah,
I guess is the word. Lando Norris does have a pretty big chance of getting that drive even as early as next year. George Russell, on the other hand, I can't see Mercedes, unless they promote from within their own family and find a position for him somewhere like Williams, somewhere like Force India, one of their customer teams. George Russell might be on the sidelines for another year, despite making it very clear he wants to be moving to Formula One ASAP.
Yeah, I mean, Norris might even be in Formula 2 for another year. He said,
it depends.
I don't mind.
On McLaren, yeah.
I want to get to Formula 1, but I don't expect it to happen tomorrow. So he's more than willing to...
But Russell doesn't. Russell has said, I wanted it this year. Like, already, I think next year's already, you're asking a lot from him to wait even longer, considering how impatient he seems to be with his statements.
See, and I've got to say, am I Team Russell or am I Team Norris? I'm Team Norris.
Okay. But
he's
not
a much cooler dude.
I will say George Russell seems a little boring.
He's a bit
also
of a wanker.
He looks 12. He doesn't like. Yeah, I know the drivers are very young when they start these careers in Formula One sometimes, but he looks way too young to be driving anything. He looks too young to be driving a golf cart. So I'm just saying.
Yeah. Actually, weirdly enough, today on press the thingy.
Oh, press it.
Yeah. Today I was watching Lando Norris playing iRacing on Twitch. For about an hour.
He was streaming it. Okay,
yeah,
cool.
He was streaming it and was chatting to everyone, and I was talking shit to him as well, and that was pretty fun. At one point, he made a massive mistake, completely cocked up a corner, and I'm like, and he said, what did he say? He went, oh, no Apex. He just muttered that, no Apex, and I'm like, actually, Lando, there was an Apex. You just missed it.
Ouch.
And he's like, I fucking hate the Apex. All right, I want to stay away from them. And I'm like, fair enough. All right. So he has a sense of humor. He can respond to bullshit in kind. And Backmarker loves that.
We love Fernando the meme master. So we need a replacement for that.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, I have a somewhat related story, I think.
Sure.
Speaking of McLaren, Alonso has come out and said Le Mans is the priority for this season. 100%. All my focus is on Le Mans. I want to win the 24 hours.
Like over Formula One.
Pretty much. He has revealed that winning the 24 hours of Le Mans is his main goal for this year and doubts he can, quote, save his Formula One season. This comes after the weekend the Spaniard contested the 6 hours of Spa in the Toyota LMP1 car. Of course, you will mention. How did they go, Raj?
Fernando Alonso won.
Yes, they
the
won
6 hours
along
of Spa.
Teammate Lando Norris.
Say again?
Was his teammate... Who's his teammate? Not
no,
Lando Norris.
He raced
with Lando in the other thing.
In Daytona,
That's it. Who is his teammates? It's the Japanese...
Kazuki Nakajima and Sebastian Buemi.
That's correct. Thank you very much. After they qualified on pole due to a regulation issue with the other car that they were competing against.
Yeah.
So from beginning to end, quite a convincing victory for him in his first run in an official World Endurance Championship race. But he's kind of put... I mean, he loved it. He's come out and absolutely said how much he enjoyed being behind the car, being behind the wheel of a fast car, overtaking those less powerful divisions as well is monstrous to watch.
Yeah.
He overtakes like 8 cars on a single straight because they're just so much slower than him.
That's the thing. If you're driving LMP1, especially a manufacturer like Toyota,
mm.
and how many other manufacturers are there? Oh, that's right, zero. You're faster than every single person on the circuit. So he would have been just flying past people left, right, and center. Which he was. Oh, my God. Did you see the accident that happened over the
weekend?
Yeah,
I saw the clip of it. That was a big accident.
Oh, my God. It, like, literally one of those moments where you feel slightly winded watching motorsport. This guy went off at Eau Rouge and just piled, like, had a tire failure, basically, and just went straight into the wall.
Yeah, just at full speed, basically.
At full speed.
Didn't stop whatsoever. He is okay, right?
Yeah, he is okay.
I heard that he was okay. He was, you know, taken to hospital for precautionary sort of things, but determined to be just beat up a little bit, essentially.
Yeah.
So good to hear. It's crazy. I mean, those tin top cars are like driving around in a massive airbag, but at the same time, it's scary to see.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, Fernando Alonso focusing more on Le Mans. I think these kind of indications just speak more and more to how Formula One doesn't seem to be a priority for him moving forward. And that next year's seat is certainly far from a certainty. Although I saw some really interesting theories about how he could be moving to Ferrari as a placeholder seat and whatnot.
Oh, bullshit.
I saw this really cool... Think of it this way. Okay, Raj, while we're on the topic. If the Ferrari seat doesn't go to someone like Daniel Ricciardo, and they are looking at either, you know, Raikkonen wanting to leave, or they want to move Raikkonen on. Not that I think he needs to after the season he is starting to have. I could see him do another year or two.
Yeah.
Not that I think he has to, not and whether or not he wants to, I don't know. But if they were looking at maybe waiting that little bit longer until Leclerc has a couple more years under his belt, maybe even just one or two, someone like Fernando Alonso, who's a similar age to Raikkonen, about a year younger, kind of towards the end of his career, they could put in that seat as like, look, we know he's not going to stay here forever. We're not giving this guy this seat for the next 6 years. We don't have to build the team around him. He's someone who can easily deliver us points. If he keeps his head, like, you know, as a, not necessarily a number two driver, but he knows that he needs to work as a team player. If we can keep that kind of energy that Fernando has to just driving the best he can do and not fucking up the rest of the team, he'd be the perfect position to be like 1 or 2 years and then Leclerc is ready and experienced.
He'd never not necessarily, accept that,
well, you know.
Never, and neither would Ricciardo. They have to find another placeholder if they want.
I don't think they necessarily have to say we're picking you up as a number two, but to pick someone up who could easily deliver them the points that they needed to, whether it's in first or second, or, you know, be a team player, not necessarily a team player for Vettel.
Because I think he would kill Vettel. I think he would slay him.
Yeah. I mean, like, as a team player is, look, do not fuck Vettel's race up to get your race.
Well, no,
but,
obviously,
you know, get us the points we need for the constructors.
Yeah.
Something like that. If they could convince him that he's not a number two, but, you know, do Raikkonen's job without as much, you know, taking one for the team, bending over for Vettel.
Yeah.
It might happen even despite the shady past with Ferrari. It's a long shot.
Maybe, but you're assuming that Ferrari just has cash to piss on. Yeah, okay.
Exactly.
Maybe.
Exactly. I mean, I don't think it's going to happen. But the theory behind you want someone towards the end of their career who might only be willing to do it for a year or two, maybe. I don't think they'd be happy with all these WEC commitments and things, though.
Oh, so, nope. No freaking
it,
way.
It's very unlikely. I just thought it was an interesting concept.
Yeah.
Anyway.
No, it is. It is.
Moving on.
Anyway, while we're sticking with WEC, I might as well do a story
I have
here.
Do your WEC thing.
My WEC thing. Okay, so this one's actually my biggest story of the week, guys.
All right, wait,
it's
I'm giving
Formula
you an
one.
Other motorsports noise. I don't know what this one does. That works.
Yeah, that works. Okay. So the WEC's LMP1 promise that could not be kept. The efforts to give Toyota some competition in the World Endurance Championship Super Season have led to expectations of the small-budget privateer outfit snapping at the heels of the manufacturer powerhouse. But it's not quite going to play out like that. Now, can Toyota be beaten by the new wave of privateers entering the World Endurance Championship for the 2018-2019 Super Season?
Probably not.
The answer has to be no. And that's not just because it's the only manufacturer still standing in LMP1. That status, of course, means it has more resources, a higher level of organization, and a better driver lineup than any of the independents. Not to mention a proven three-year-old design in the TS50 hybrid, pitched against an array of new cars from Ginetta, Rebellion, and BR Engineering. But it also has a rule book on its side. So, essentially, they've negotiated with the FIA, with the organisers of WEC, to essentially ensure that they can go for one lap longer in every single stint that they do. So, at Le Mans, they can go for one lap longer than the cars around them.
And they make 30 stops, 30 stints basically, on average in a Le Mans race, if everything goes to plan. So one extra can almost eliminate an entire stop almost.
Yeah, well,
over
almost.
The course of 24 hours.
Not only that, the Toyotas have been given essentially a wider fuel nozzle. So they can inject their fuel 5 seconds faster than any other LMP1 car there is. So their pit stops will be 5 seconds faster. So essentially the rule book has been made to ensure that if the Toyota manages to keep going, it will win. As long as it can keep going. Fernando... Well,
the 1 6-hour race we have so far suggests yes, but...
Suggests yes, but 24 versus 6. Toyota found out that the difference between that, last year. But, yeah, anyway, so there's another thing here. The head of Toyota Motorsport, Pascal Vassilon, came out and said this. We understood that there was no point having two cars running much faster than the others and running longer. Definitely, we agreed to have the non-hybrid cars a bit closer, but not at the same pace. Again, from our point of view, it doesn't make much sense. So, right there, he said it. He knows that Toyota is going to have a direct advantage. That even though the LMP1, the naturally aspirated non-hybrid LMP1s, even though their top speed might be better, they've kind of been restricted in their performance to ensure that Toyota, as long as their cars stay together, will win Le Mans. So Fernando Alonso might not have to try too hard. He'll just have to beat Kamui Kobayashi in the other car. We'll see if he can do it. Sorry. One second. So, Toyota has made a concession, though. One concession, and it happens to be a pretty big one. So, it is agreed to a dramatic cut in the amount of petrol it can use over a stint. Last year at Spa, it could use 44.1 kilos of fuel. This year, only 35.1. That means that there's only a one-lap difference between the amount of laps that the cars can do, by the way. Last year, it was a lot bigger. So, it should be closer, they should be closer than they've been for the last few years. But as I've said a million times, unless the Toyota comes up with issues, it looks like they're going to be winning it. But I'd love to see a Rebellion or a BR Engineering or someone else win Le Mans rather than a manufacturer. And I'm sorry, Fernando, I know that's going to really not sit well with
you. He's never going to get his triple crown if he can't even get a double.
Yeah.
He needs one of them to come together quickly so he can focus on the third.
Yeah,
because if he's focusing on two more for too long, it's going to slip past.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on to something else.
Yes.
Speaking of a story we kind of mentioned last week about Miami.
Yes.
It's ramped up in terms of information we have. There has been a early draft of what that could look like.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen it, it's a really long straight followed by a really long straight followed by a couple of, right-handers and left-handers around the streets
basically,
of Miami.
Basically, it looks like a really, really thin penis. All right, Brayden? You didn't have to, dodge it goes around over, the
it
obvious.
It goes over the bridge and then does, a straight hairpin back around. So that part of the track, I was a bit it's cool passing opportunity at the end, but that's just a lot of zoom, zoom, a lot of just straight
a
line.
A lot of full throttle, yeah.
That's really going to hurt some teams more than others, but I don't know. The other stuff we have about this, of course, is... Formula One, of course, has been getting together with the City of Miami Commission, adding it to the agenda that perhaps this could get FIA approval to be a street circuit for one. There are over 500 million fans. Formula One is a great racing spectacle on the planet, and Miami's status as one of the most iconic and glamorous cities combined with our robust tourist infrastructure makes Miami its perfect destination, said Sean Brashers. It is coming together to look extremely likely, and even as early as 2019.
Yeah.
Miami will, of course, the other thing to note, they have confirmed that there'll be what F1 Live did in London last year. There'll be one of those in Miami this year.
Okay.
So no matter what, Miami is getting some Formula One action this year. They also have suggested that the provisional date for the race would be around October.
Hey, maybe Lewis will turn up to that one.
Anyway. Oh, that would be interesting.
Yeah.
The provisional date for the race being October means it's already close to the Circuit of America's race in Austin, Texas, which does make logistical sense.
Mm-hmm.
However, the bad part about all this is there is still a lot of rumors that suggest that the race that will be dropped in order to make room for this Miami race will be Baku.
They're contracted until 2020.
I know. I don't know how they get out of it in that way, unless they're looking at dropping it in 2020 and then picking up Miami around then. Or if they are trying to get it in 2019, have them both simultaneously until that point.
Yeah.
If we're going to lose a race, we've mentioned it
Liberty,
last week.
Yeah.
There are better options than Baku.
Yep.
It has proven to be...
Sochi!
We want Russia, but I'm sure there are other options as well. There are historical ones. There are great races. And then there's places like Sochi, which provide neither.
Mm.
I'm happy to see Miami in the circuit calendar. I don't mind Miami. The track, look, I can't speak to it. It does look a little boring around those two long straights, but otherwise could be a really cool place to have a race.
I think we'll get a butt ton of passing, which
yeah,
is
yeah.
exactly why they've made it like this.
They have made it
for passing.
Because
they realize their audience. The audience will want some passing, so that's exactly why this track looks like this.
I like, I saw Lewis Hamilton saw it and he goes, eh, I could do better. Give me a shot at designing it. I don't think we're going to see that anytime soon.
And
but
I don't think you can. Okay, no. Lewis.
Thanks, Lewis, for your input. He'd just, you know what he'd do? He'd just draw out blessed in tracks around the circuit of Miami.
I wonder how you do the hash bit, like the hashtag.
The hashtag
bit.
In blessed. Yeah. I'm not sure. But anyway, it does look like it's coming together. It's just a matter of how long we will have to wait before we see it.
Indeed. Okay, so Formula One is evaluating an NFL draft-inspired off-season fan engagement event. Essentially, what they mean is Formula One chiefs say the success of the NFL draft is prompting them to think of ways to spice up Grand Prix racing's off-season.
Now, Raj, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
You don't like ball sports.
Yeah.
What's the NFL draft?
I have no idea. What is it?
Okay, so the NFL draft. He's not suggesting that the NFL draft be used in Formula One, a draft system. So a draft system NFL's a good example, or NBA, basketball. It's a very popular in American sports. We do have it in AFL here in Australia to a maybe not as dramatic extent. But largely, the draft acts as a recruitment period for teams to gather together on a single day. Teams will be arranged in an order depending on kind of performance. So generally speaking, lower teams will get first draft picks.
Mm.
So if you have a really awesome college prospect football player or basketball player, and they're like the hottest in demand player for that year because they're just about to come out of college and join the professional basketball league or professional football or whatever, these teams that need a stimulus of good players will have these massive events and take turns picking them out of the roster to start start playing for them. And you know,
how would that work in an F1 sense?
So I've read the article as well. He's not talking about a draft like let's pick drivers for teams and all that shit. The draft, I think that's a pretty bad analogy for Formula One because it doesn't work that way in Formula One.
No,
it doesn't work that way in a lot of sports, which is why a draft is generally specific to American sports, which have a really strong college to professional kind of system. And they're bigger team sports. You need more players and things like that. What he mainly talks about is the NFL draft, the NBA draft, all those kind of things are massive spectacles.
Mm.
They have as many fans show up to them as an actual football match.
Yeah.
As well as massive amounts of TV viewers. Because if you have your team that's doing really shit for several years and they've finally done the right trade, sometimes you will trade players, for example, for a draft pick. Mm. So after years and years of your team probably sucking, there's been, especially in basketball over the years, teams that will purposely suck for a few years to get really good picks. And then their fans will be like, fuck yeah, this is our draft. This is going to be the best thing ever. And they show up and they're just waiting to see which college prospect, which is meant to be like the next Michael Jordan is going to sign for your team.
Right.
So it's a massive spectacle to just see preseason stuff. I think what his example for Formula One would be car reveals. Have that same sort of like... Red Bull have been talking about this car this year. I'm so excited to see what they do with Aero and have them like launched in a really massive event kind of capacity, which they've sort of talked about in the past, but comparing it to the NFL draft is kind of that single event day that is as big as a race.
Right. Yeah, because I actually thought that the word draft meant like, you know, getting your teams together. So I was like, how the fuck would this work?
It isn't. I can't imagine that would be too big of a change for Formula One. No one's getting on board for that. It doesn't work for racing.
I think I would stop following Formula One if that shit happened.
It doesn't work that way in racing. But
I am.
If you watch a clip or even just like go find YouTube clip of like a 5 to 10 minute like wrap up of the NFL or the NBA draft for the most recent year, just look at the fucking turnout and the excitement. And I mean, it's also a really cool thing to watch, you know, these college prospects being told, hey, you're a number one draft pick. It's $100 million salary. Good luck. Here's a picture of you and your family just freaking out. That's really cool. But those fans, I mean, it's a really great experience for fans in the off season to have something like that to look forward to. While we have this weird trickle of like, when's Williams? Wednesday. Oh, okay, well, maybe we'll tune into their live stream if they have one. You know, it's kind of a non-event sometimes.
Yeah.
So an NFL draft system of making a like set date for something exciting to happen is very liberty.
Yeah. No, very it's very liberty, very American.
It is very American. But, yeah. I mean, not everything America does is bad. I mean, you do shit mind. Presidents, but great draft days.
Oh, man. But pre-2008, they did great presidents, and then they really fucked it all up.
I love how, like, half our listeners, probably half our listeners are like, yeah, fuck yeah. The other half are like, you fucking be careful, man. Don't you dare make America great again. You know, anyway. We shouldn't get too far into that.
Anyway, next story.
Next story.
So, why F1 should replace mirrors with cameras? Formula One should review the safety of mirrors of the current cars and consider adopting rear-facing cameras as an alternative, according to the Motorsport Show. And the Motorsport Show consists of Peter Windsor and technical guru Craig Scarborough, who you may have heard of. And Windsor's saying there's talk of mounting F1 mirrors on the halo as an alternative, and ask Scarborough whether a cleaner solution can be applied to F1 from examples in other categories such as WEC.
So what World does WEC do? You have a screen that shows you what's behind you.
Yeah, correct.
In the car, like a in the cockpit.
Yes.
Like a reversing camera, but like it's always going forward sort of thing.
No, like
it... Yeah, yeah, where the car's going... Is it in the same position forward, of like where the reversing camera is?
Yeah, I
in
think
the car
so.
Sort of?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, okay.
So, I mean, they're prototypes, so they would be wherever the hell the driver wanted it to be, but yeah. So that's essentially it. And then Craig Scarborough says... We rely on reflective mirrors, and they're limited in the size you're allowed to have. They're limited in position, and they're quite poorly supported, whether they're attached to the bodywork or the halo. Why have mirrors at all? Nowadays, it's not necessary. The technology is there, and in WEC, a company called Gentex makes this kit where you have a rear-facing camera and a little display in the cockpit that gives you a full rear view from the car. So there's no blind spots. You get the full wide view, or you can get a narrow view if you want.
I mean, it's certainly safer. It will mean there's less incidents, which is, you know, maybe good or bad, depending on how you look at it. From a safety point of view, good.
Yeah.
From a, you know, interesting race outcome point of view, maybe not so interesting. Mm. The Formula One mirrors are fucking tiny. They are really small. It doesn't surprise me they have massive blind spots. We saw an issue even in Baku. Magnussen claimed that his mirror was bouncing around too much for even to have seen Gasly, was it? Yeah, Gasly in his mirror because it was just too loose.
Yep.
I mean, it also introduces the idea that like a mirror is a mirror. Yes, it can come off. Yes, it can bounce around and be a little faulty, but it's a physical thing that can't just stop working. You know what I mean?
Yeah, true.
A camera is an electrical component. We see electrical failures in Formula One cars quite often. You know, the radio falls apart, things like that. Would they say, oh, Lewis, your camera's stopped working in orange, you know, black and orange flags. Or is it black and orange?
Black and orange.
You get black and orange flags for, you know, a cable, a wire that connects your camera to your screen being faulty throughout the race.
It would be disappointing as hell, hey?
Because that's so boring. As a viewer, you don't even fucking notice it's happened.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Lewis would notice and their team would notice. Is that determined to be too unsafe to drive now because you don't have reflective mirrors anymore? I mean, it can be very solid, but it can't be foolproof. It could break.
Agreed. I'm not sure what Craig Scarborough would say to that.
It's interesting. I mean, look, it would hopefully be a very unlikely circumstance.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't mind seeing it. Does it take away from the essence of Formula One? I don't know.
Not really. I think, though, it could be dangerous as all hell if you're driving, you know, and you need to be looking behind you, and then suddenly, glup, the cable comes loose and boom.
You would have to have, I mean, what about a car to your left and right? The mirrors aren't just directly behind you. They are those spots to the slight left and right as well. It would have to be a rather wide-angle lens.
Yeah, it would be like a fisheye.
And so where's the screen going to be positioned? In the halo,
In the cockpit, or maybe in the halo, but I'd say it would be in the cockpit. So
sort of like, you know how Lance Stroll's steering wheel doesn't have the display on it? It's in front of him?
Yeah.
Instead of that being there, have the screen there or something?
I reckon it'd be below the steering wheel, possibly. In your lap somewhere. Or maybe to the left of it. I don't know. I'm sure the teams would figure out a position.
I would love
it.
To think that they just keep the mirrors where they are, but put screens on there instead of reflective glass.
Yeah.
They just keep them exactly the same, but have little TVs in them.
Maybe that's a solution for the whole what-if-it-breaks problem. You have these mirrors that aren't actually mirrors, they're screens, but as soon as the screens stop working, these little
explosive bolts just
boom, and you get there's a mirror left underneath. You're like, oh, fantastic.
Look, we're full of good ideas. It's not a bad option.
And putting explosive bolts on an F1 car, that sounds like a damn good idea.
I think that is several years away if it ever does happen.
Yeah, maybe.
You don't have as much room as in a WEC car to put screens in and things like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll see. My story.
Yes.
I have an interesting one. Williams is apparently protesting Alonso's drive in Baku.
I heard this.
This is to do with Alonso essentially driving a motorcycle for most of a lap on two wheels.
Yeah.
Destroying the shit out of his floor. And clearly, like, I couldn't believe he finished the race, let alone drove back out after coming into the pits after what was left of that car. But Williams' team is not happy about how Fernando Alonso drove that broken car back into the pits and asked the stewards to review it because they didn't actually review it on the weekend. They checked that it was essentially safe and it wasn't bits of carbon still flying off it after the thing, and they determined, yeah, well, if he's happy, okay, have fun. Be careful out there. He was praised very heavily for that, but the team of Williams, I don't know why they're so worried about it. I mean, Are they concerned because of the Sorotkin getting points on his license and the penalties because of the Perez incident early? I mean, is it just like we got a penalty, they should as well?
No, I think it might be something like Williams considers McLaren to be a rival in the Constructors' Championship and they just want to fuck them. Mm. Just classic competitors being competitors. But yeah, I'm not sure if there's anything else to that story.
Yeah, it's interesting. They're going to have a meeting about it and determine whether or not any action needs to be taken before the Spanish Grand Prix. So if all of a sudden Alonso has a couple of penalty points, it might be because of this, penalty places rather.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, yeah, Sergei Sorokin's dropping three places for Spain.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, maybe it's just a matter of, fuck, we can't be that far behind Alonso when it comes to the Spanish Grand Prix. Let's try and get him behind us a little bit.
Yep. Okay, so Haas says they may alter. Of course they're going to alter, but they will alter their 2019 design plans after the wings rule change that we saw last week.
They can't just be like, no, fuck you, we're putting them on. They can't do that. Of course they're going to have to alter them.
Yeah, it's like, no, we're not altering our designs. Nope, we're going to keep the outwash. Well, you're not allowed them, though.
Mm.
Well, we're keeping them anyway. Of course you're going to have to change your goddamn designs, Gunther. So anyway, Gunther Steiner came out and said Haas is under a lot of pressure now. Haas was one of the teams to vote no.
Somewhat surprisingly,
until I considered this fact. They're already pushing through bits to be made for next year.
So and they're designs, not technically making it. They're getting a third party to do that.
Yeah, indeed. Or some of them are made in Haas's automated kind of stuff. But their designs would already be set in stone.
Mm.
So then to have this rule change come out now, say, oh, it's all different now, have fun. They're like, what the actual fuck, sorry. Yeah,
we just spent a bunch of money developing this idea and we're about to print them out or like 3D print them and develop them and everything, yeah.
We just spent half our budget for next year already kind of thing. And now you want us to do it again? Mm. So I understand why they're royally pissed off about this. However, Force India, it makes you think, did they have an inkling maybe? Why would they have voted
well,
yes?
Well, what do you mean an inkling? We had it's not like we reported that story yesterday and it was the first time we'd heard about it. They were talking about it.
Mm.
It looked very unlikely that the Formula One group would go, fuck you, we're doing it anyway. Like, yeah. We're going to not listen to what you're saying. We're going to do it. That seemed a little unlikely, but clearly Liberty and, you know, other interested parties have forced it through. To say the least. And I think maybe Force India have made the smart call and gone, look, whether or not we vote for it, there's a good chance that the powers that be are just going to push this through because they're not doing business like it used to be done.
Mm.
Force India seemed to strike me as a little bit more forward thinking in terms of, shit, let's realize who's running this company now. Let's see who's running this sport.
Yeah.
That's, and if it pays off for them, awesome. But yeah, we'll see how they develop.
Yeah, indeed. Anyway, so Gunter actually came out and he said, look, at the moment, I still have to speak back to the guys in Italy, see how we can do this. We haven't had time to talk through it yet. For small teams like us, it is not an advantage to get technical regulations for next year so late. Mm. We will do our best, but it will not be easy. Steiner also confirmed that Haas will not be following the general trend of bringing a major update package to next week's Spanish Grand Prix. Instead, it will introduce bigger changes later in the season.
They
so don't expect
when.
To see any jumps from Haas.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. I mean, do you think that... I'm going to tie this into my next story as well, but do you think this has something to do with perhaps the relationship they have with Ferrari and the kind of development support that Ferrari provides them in aspects like, you know, complicated front wing end plates and things like that? Does it have something to do with the kind of support they receive from that more senior team?
Sorry about that.
That was a boring point. I'm so sorry. I'm moving on.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, I really just asked that to be a really good segue because Mercedes would be looking at starting up a Haas-style technical partnership with a customer team similar to what Ferrari have.
Yeah.
Toto Wolff has said that Mercedes wouldn't be against forming a closer relationship with either one of their customer teams in either Williams or Force India in the same style that Ferrari has with Haas.
Yeah.
So ignore my previous question, but do you see this as a likely option? And if so, where do you think they would potentially be more interested in going? The pink cars or the white ones?
The pink cars, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
Purely because they've had form for the last few years.
True.
And yeah, I do see them doing it. I do see them doing it. I think Ferrari, the amount of pull that Ferrari's got from Alfa Romeo Sauber, from Haas, Mercedes needs something like that. They need some fodder.
Mm.
And I think, yeah, Force India would be a perfect place for them to do that.
The other thing to note is Force India currently use the Mercedes power unit and gearbox, while the Williams is actually only just using the gearbox. They have their own proprietary power unit.
Really?
Apparently. According to this article from WTF1, the more involved collaboration would mean that the teams buy more parts, of course, so that includes like bits of suspension assemblies.
You sure it's not the other way around? They have the power unit, but they make their own gearbox?
No, apparently they're just using the Williams gearbox.
The Mercedes gearbox.
Yeah, Mercedes gearbox are just being used by Williams, yeah. But they're not using the power unit, quote
unquote.
The Odyssey.
I'm going to look that up.
That surprised me a little bit too. But essentially, because it'd be a closer relationship, things like the suspension units and assemblies would be coming from Mercedes, and the costs to the teams would be dramatically reduced to the customer. Williams would benefit that in terms of they have fuck all money.
Yeah.
But Williams are closer in that as well. And they are, of course, you know, not exactly rolling in it, despite being a little more propped up by sponsorship.
Yeah.
I am a little bit worried about Williams. Claire came out earlier this week and said, Williams will not turn into Tyrrell. If that ever happens, it'll be over my dead body. Like, really adamant, like,
whoa,
fucking leave us to it kind of shit. I'm a little worried about Williams, considering they don't have that relationship with Martini next year.
Yeah.
They are really struggling. They got two pay drivers. That's really the only income I can see them having. Force India have a very lucrative deal with the BWT guys.
Yeah.
If they even got more closely with Mercedes and reduced some of these costs by having that Haas Ferrari kind of relationship, where does that leave a team like Williams for survival, essentially?
Yeah, that's true. I guess they can negotiate that between them.
It might be better for Mercedes to look at Williams because they're a bit more forced into having to take a position like that. I don't know.
Maybe. I guess we'll see how that comes about, if it does, which I see it happening later in the year sometime.
Yeah, that will, I mean, maybe if Williams can't find a... They don't have a replacement sponsor for Martini yet that I know of, so...
No, and I doubt they're going to have much interest.
They might get desperate soon.
Yeah. Okay, so Red Bull, according to John Watson, ex-Formula 1 driver, Red Bull should demote Verstappen to Toro Rosso over the Ricciardo crash. I thought was pretty funny.
Last time Red Bull did that, it worked out well. They got Max Verstappen.
Yeah, exactly.
Who are they going to promote?
Who are they going to promote?
Science?
God knows.
Gasly.
Pierre Gasly.
Ah.
So Watson said, Red Bull have created a monster. After signing him up on multi-million buck deal, he thinks he is the undisputed number one. And actually, the way he races, it's as if he's still in Formula 3. If I ran the team, I'd swap him with Pierre Gasly, put him back in a Toro Rosso to learn how to be a Grand Prix driver. Until he realizes that driving as recklessly as he does serves nobody, he's just going to be a dangerous hot rod. To think smart, not fast, is beyond him. Over 4 weekends so far, he has screwed up each time. They've created a monster, and it's difficult to control him now.
I mean, that would be a massive blow to Verstappen.
I'm
sure. Wow. I would be very surprised if there wasn't something in his contract that said, whoever demote me, I have the ability to move if I want. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Somewhere in his contract would be like, if I'm not racing for Red Bull, I have the ability to ask around for my service, you know, things like that.
Imagine if they fire Verstappen and bring back Kvyat. That would be the funniest thing ever.
Well, I mean, I would assume that if they did move that, you know, move someone up for like Gasly, that Red Bull, that Toro Rosso seat could go to someone back like Kvyat. I mean, I did see that same story I was talking about, that same video I watched about, you know, potentially a Fernando Alonso Ferrari move, also mentioned that Kvyat was in the mix. For a similar purpose of, like, we don't want him forever, but he might be a good stopgap.
Yeah, indeed.
I don't know. And he's already in the Ferrari family, of course. Kvyat's gone. He's no longer in that Red Bull family. But I see the concept. Like, at this point, after the races we've seen this year, it doesn't seem totally crazy to say maybe he was rushed into a top team and rushed into such a massive contract. Maybe. But I don't think it's too late. The ship has sailed to ever demote him back down to where he came from. He is a number one driver nowadays, or, you know, not number one, but he is a top tier driver, and he's not going to go back anytime soon. What do you think, Raj? Do you see it happening?
I have no
idea. Do you want it to happen? Would you want it to happen?
No, I don't want it to happen. I want Max to learn how to drive, learn how to be a Grand Prix driver, because he has the pace.
Yeah,
he has the pace. He needs to learn how to control it. Exactly. Because otherwise he's going to be a has-been. He'll be nothing but a has-been.
That quote that was really smart from him was that thinking smart rather than fast. And I think that's what's caught out Verstappen so many times, is he instinctively blocks, or he instinctively goes for a move that's not there because he thinks so quickly he can't actually catch up to where his mind is.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on. Raj, would you like me to talk a little bit about something that might throw another spanner into the works if that ever happened? Renault is apparently preparing for a Sainz exit.
What? Really?
So not that they're saying that they think he's going anywhere, but they believe that if anyone was to go somewhere, it would be Sainz of the two drivers right now.
Yeah,
I think probably, I mean, even if Hülkenberg was to get a promotion one day, which personally I think he'd be, you know, more than capable of fulfilling a role at a bigger team. Sainz being on a loan deal from Red Bull, Spaniard could be drafted in by at any moment to replace a moving Daniel Ricciardo should he decide to leave for either Mercedes or Ferrari. So where does that leave Renault? Abitbol has been quoted to say, "We need to make plans. We need to be prepared for the worst, as always. The worst for us would be that we want Carlos to stay, but that might not be possible, and it can happen, let's be honest. So we need to plan accordingly. We have started to work on next year's car. We have a meeting with him next week to talk about our plans for next year and objectives, as well as, you know, where he would fit in with that new 2019 car. Who do you think they replace him with? Do they have a junior driver that would be ready to make the move up?
Jack Atkin.
Do you think he's ready, though,
to
be immediately, you know, put into a...
Ask me after this F2 season.
But that's too far away, man.
Too far away.
You can't put all your... That's putting all your eggs in one basket. Because what if at the end of this season he has a meltdown and they go, well, he really needs another season or two to work it out? This is a factory team. It's not Renault. It's not Renault's junior team they're going to put him into. It's their works team.
Yeah.
Hülkenberg can pick up a certain amount of points, but you need someone there as well.
Yeah, he wouldn't. Look, they wouldn't want to. Unless he turns the F2 season around, comes back and wins the damn thing, then they might consider it.
Yeah.
But it doesn't look like Jack Atkin's going to be doing anything like that so far. So
It could be a very interesting grid lineup next year. Like the most different we've had in several years. I mean, we have two juniors this year, but if we have enough movement and then a bunch of new players come in next year, it could be very interesting.
Alrighty, one more story here, guys. So Ferrari cannot make Formula One, quote, let monkeys run the zoo.
That would be a fun zoo.
Yeah. And this quote comes from an ex-British touring car champion. Came out and said, Ferrari should not be bullied into letting the monkeys run the zoo. Formula One should not be bullied into letting the monkeys run the zoo by bowing to Ferrari's threat to quit Grand Prix racing. So he's basically saying, don't believe it. Do not believe it. Asked how F1 should handle Ferrari's threats, Motorsport Show panelist Alan Gow said, let them. No team is bigger than the championship. I think Ferrari has been built around Formula One. They've spent little or no marketing advertising their brand because it's all done by Formula One. Why would they walk away from that? Hmm. Now, that makes a hell of a lot of sense. And he goes on to say, he compared it to the championship standoff with Alfa Romeo back in 94, the British Touring Car Championship, that is.
Mm.
And so Alfa withdrew from the Alton Park round after a row over the aerodynamic benefits over its 155's wings. I've never been one to allow the monkeys to run the zoo, says this guy. Manufacturers threaten to pull out every year. That's par for the course in every championship.
Yeah,
don't react to that.
Supercars had forward bow out in a factory, manufacturer sense.
Yeah,
they're coming back as Mustangs. So they it, you know, it comes around. The championship didn't die. If anything, it flourished in those kind of environments.
No, exactly.
Ferrari, yes, it's a bit different because Ferrari almost is Formula One, or they say it is. I think more than ever, though.
I think we just keep saying that. I don't know if I believe it. In fact, I don't believe it.
It's becoming less and less relevant considering, yes, they're leading the Constructors' Championship right now, but remove them from that equation. I don't think we have any less interesting races.
No.
Unless, of course, it just goes back to everyone sucks and Mercedes is the best, but we will see.
I doubt that would happen, but yeah. He goes on to finish with, in the 1990s when Alfa Romeo threatened to withdraw, I went to open the paddock gates on a Saturday night and let them out. They came back the next day. So just to show you, he doesn't believe anything that Ferrari is saying.
Empty threats.
And considering how much marketing Formula One does for Ferrari, I can see that.
Yeah, it's a mutually beneficial relationship.
It's symbiotic, so Ferrari needs to realize that. Yeah.
Raj, I actually also have one more quick story, and then we'll get into our predictions. First of all, one very quick thing in terms of tyres, because this is a tyre story. They've announced that the hard tyre will be making its debut at the British Grand Prix.
Mm-hmm.
Not the super hard, but the hard. So that's, I think, what last year's medium was or something like that. But the upcoming race, I'm going to do this really seamlessly. Let's just start talking about the Spanish Grand Prix because this story is related. The tyres.
Yeah.
First of all, I want to note, Mercedes have been very conservative coming into this race. They've both, Hamilton and Bottas, only brought five sets of soft, and three mediums, which is, compared to Ferrari, which are bringing seven super softs, and Red Bull, which are bringing six. Then you move down to like Williams, who Stroll's getting nine, Sorokin's getting 10 sets of super softs, but only one set of softs and two sets of mediums. It's a bit of a varied pack. Clearly, Williams are looking for that pace.
Mercedes know they like the harder tyres
better. They need them, yeah.
They can turn them on easily.
Mm.
They should be going for the harder end of that range if I was them.
It's an interesting move. I mean, I think for the rest of the series, we're going to be seeing a lot of Mercedes kind of going for these longer stints, hoping that the power gets them through, and Ferrari going, if we throw this at the wall and it works, it'll come off more often than not.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we're going to see, the trend, like we have done in a lot of the races so far, including China comes to mind, despite, of course, it falling apart for both of them.
Yeah.
And Bahrain especially. So we will see how it turns out. Anyway, Raj, let's talk more about the Spanish Grand Prix.
Sure.
Where I ask you this question all the time, how excited are you about the track that is the Circuit de Catalunya compared to other tracks on the calendar?
Average?
You sound super excited by that weird groan. Okay.
Didn't I?
I don't know.
It's really not that great for racing, and especially this year with the resurface, I think it's going to be a pretty boring track to watch F1 cars go round. So I'm not really looking forward for any other reason that it gives us a really probably the first good idea we have of where the cars sit in reference to each other.
Yeah, the truly accurate sort of placement will be, I think, the qualifying result, unless someone crashes out or something. Where they qualify will give us a really good idea of where they are on a fairly even playing field.
One lap pace anyway.
Yeah.
But race pace, again, something entirely different.
Exactly. A little bit of history. It is it has been running it there since 1991. It is not a 99 lap, 66 lap race.
Yes.
A circuit length of 4.6 kilometers, making it 307 kilometers in total. Raj, who do you think holds the lap record for the Circuit de Catalunya? I'll give you the year. 2008 it was
Kimi Raikkonen.
100% correct. Did you just know that?
Oh, yeah, I just read that today.
Fuck. All right. You gave me this look of like, oh, I'll just take a guess, shall I? Okay, I got to stop asking you the same questions because you're starting researching.
Yeah, exactly. I know what you're going to ask.
It's a really traditional looking track in terms of like Formula One track look and design. I don't even know how to really describe it. Very long straight that leads into... I really like turn three, that really long turn three.
Kind of like similar to the Curva Grande at Monza.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I think we'll see an interesting race. I do really like playing this one on my Formula One game. I do like the track, but you're right. The resurfacing will mean it's a little bit different to previous years. They'll be very quick.
Yeah.
But it might make certain, you know, tire abrasion goes out the window a little bit and things like that. So if Mercedes get out there on a set of mediums from an early stop, they could easily go the distance.
Yeah, probably.
Anyway, Raj, shall we get into predictions?
Sure.
What do you have for pole position?
As always, and no, I'm joking, Sebastian Vettel this time. Sebastian Vettel is going to get pole.
I also said that he'd be getting pole position.
That
car, when they... I used to just be like, ah, Mercedes will get this, no problem. I don't care which one it is, it'll be Mercedes. Ferrari, maybe it's a party mode. Maybe it's just they can turn those tyres on quickly.
They have a better car.
I'm not going to say that just yet. I think that the Mercedes is just a little more difficult to get going.
Mm.
It's even more of a diva than last year. When they get it going, it is the best car, but it's way harder to get going. So overall, most of the time, the Ferrari is the best one on the grid. That's what I think it actually is.
That's what I mean by the Ferrari is the better car. Because if it's the better car in most circumstances,
it's the better car most of the time. Car. But if Mercedes get it right, if the circumstances are there for it, you know.
But going by pre-season testing, which, of course, was around Barcelona, I think Ferrari might be unstoppable this weekend.
You might be right. There's one thing to note with the weather. It's probably going to be, you know, fairly cool, but a little bit overcast for race weekend. But there is some... We're recording this quite far in advance, so this could change, but there is a suggestion right now that Saturday afternoon from about 2 or 3 o'clock could get rainy.
Okay.
So whether or not that goes and moves around right around qualifying time.
If there's rain in the race, all bets are off.
Yeah, it could go very different. That resurfaced, then covered in a bunch of water. Could be very interesting.
That will be dangerous.
Anyway, moving on to our podium. Who do you have for first place?
Vettel.
Same. Second place?
Ricciardo.
Interesting. I've gone Hamilton.
Okay.
And third place?
Hamilton.
Bottas.
There you go.
I don't know. I think the Red Bulls might not race each other this weekend.
Yeah, maybe.
Might cost him. Or, I don't know, I did say Ricciardo would get fastest lap.
Okay.
Probably from, like, fourth position get the fastest
lap. I also said Ricciardo would get fastest lap as well.
How many safety cars have you predicted?
Zero.
Me too. Again, rain will change that, but I'm saying zero.
Yeah.
It's not the kind of track that it has so much fucking runoff. There's a, you know, even in testing, we see people fly off the track. And they can come back onto it, you know, and then come back into the pits. You know, it's not necessarily one of those places. And if they do, it will be a yellow flags wave, maybe a virtual safety car as they drag it off. There's not that many circumstances where a safety car is going to need to be called.
Mm.
And our bonus prediction on the Fantasy GP website, how many cars will finish?
My pole prediction, by the way, is Vettel.
Did you not say so? Yeah, no, you said that. Yeah, you said that.
And also, my bonus prediction is...
How many cars will finish the race?
16 or more.
Yeah, 16 or more as well. Yeah. We might have one or two technical failures.
I put it this way. I don't think it's going to be much like Baku.
No, exactly.
It's going to be pretty predictable and, run of the mill, I think.
I'm unfortunately with you on that. Of course, we have a double weekend, though, because Monaco is the week after.
Yeah.
So And Monaco is a bit of a procession. I love Monaco because it's such, it's like my favorite one to watch for qualifying by far for the year.
Yeah.
And I just love the weekend. Even if it's not the most interesting race, I just love watching cars drive around Monaco.
Well, if you don't want to watch that, you could always wait a few hours and watch the Indy 500.
Yeah, you've got that as well. We will talk a little bit about that next week.
Yes, indeed.
In the lead up to that. But I think if I want Spain to be like a really exciting race because I don't know if Monaco will be.
Yeah.
We will see. Anyway, Raj, before we go and tell everyone where they can find us and stuff, you sent me a video before, which I have watched.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't even think you really need the visuals because it's just Kimi Raikkonen driving the world's fucking ugliest car.
Indeed. But this is Kimi Raikkonen on an advertisement. And as you can tell, really, he just sells your products with such finesse, with such excitement.
This one's a little bit older, but I haven't seen this one before, yeah.
The cell concept car is small but packed with potential.
Is it? Is it really?
It is a car designed for our cities.
Oh my god, Kimi.
At 70 kilometers per hour, it can do 38 kilometers per liter.
And in the video, by the way, he's reading the direct.
He's not even looking at the camera. He's staring off at the teleprompter, like, doesn't give a fuck. We'll post that in the show notes. I've seen some great ones. This one might be my new favorite because he's talking about like this ugly like single-seater car that's meant to be really low fuel. So it looks... I love this comment. The number one comment in the YouTube thing here is like, great, a 90s electric car, but with all the downsides of petrol, and Kimi Raikkonen looks like about as excited as anyone who would own this piece of shit. Oh, Kimi. You're too much.
Seriously.
You're too much for
us. It's like, it's an awful-looking smart car. And smart cars... weren't great looking.
Look, I can see why it would be practical, but
well,
I mean,
position
I'm as excited
very
as Kimi.
Similar to driving in F1.
Oh, that's the best bit. Because it's a single seat, it's like driving in F1.
Oh yeah, totally like driving in F1, man. Yeah.
Love it. Anyway, we are Backmarker Podcast. Check us out at backmarkerpodcast.com where we post our show notes, including all our news and video links like that. Of course, our Facebook page where we link to our show as well. And you can find us on iTunes and anywhere else you get your podcast from. Please leave us a review on iTunes if you have the chance. Otherwise, Raj, I will see you next week where we talk about the race that we've just going to watch in the future, being Spain and Monaco and the Indy 500, all the news, everything you need to know.
Indeed, we'll see you then.